Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Birth of the Dragon, Leap, Good Time, 13 Minutes, and Unleashed. I'm also going to be talking about the news, Trailer Park, box office predictions, an interview with Kate Micucci from Unleashed, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
We had another celebrity death this past week, and that is Jerry Lewis, legendary comedian, actor, director. He died at age 91. Now, he had a rough life recently, especially in terms of medical issues, because he had sustained a back injury in like the 60s when he was performing in Las Vegas, and he ended up getting like addicted to painkillers because he was trying to cope with that, and eventually had this spinal surgery that saved him. He was originally, at one point, was going to kill himself. I saw him talking about this. It was either Conan O'Brien or David Letterman or something like that, but he was talking about the struggle he went through, and he finally was able to get over that. And I mean, he'd been around for so long, and even just recently, I remember it was last year or the year before, he headlined a movie at in his late 80s. It was it's an impressive career, and I know he has a couple skeletons in his closet. I know he was not always the easiest guy to work with, and I know he had said some misogynistic things about female comedians. I think also you have to look at the fact that he was in his, even when he said these, he was in his 80s. And this was somebody who, the world was very different for comedians back in the 50s and 60s than it is today. And even though you had your Mae West, you had your Joan Rivers, this is sort of like your grandfather saying stuff that's maybe not politically correct, but you really can't hold against him because he lived in a different era and he grew up in a different era. So it's very sad to see Jerry Lewis die, and especially because, like I said, he just did a movie not too long ago. He will be missed, and he's a legend in comedy. He absolutely is. There's a couple pieces of development news that I think are interesting to talk about. The first one is from the Star Wars front. They're developing an Obi-Wan Kenobi origin movie, which I think is kind of silly because, didn't we get that in episodes 1, 2, and 3? Yeah, it was Anakin's story, but Obi-Wan Kenobi was involved in it quite a bit. I'm curious to see exactly how they do this, because it wouldn't be when he was chosen to be a Jedi, because in the Star Wars universe, they were like little kids, like 2 or 3 years old, when the Jedi were identified. So I'm sure this is like the adventures that he has, and they're probably going to bring back somebody else to play Anakin Skywalker. They're going to have to because their paths coincide. There's other talk of them possibly doing a Yoda movie and a Boba Fett movie. And I know there are some people out there that are freaking out about this. And film Twitter just went nuts on this, saying, oh, this is just stupid. We don't need to rehash these old characters. Do new and innovative and interesting stuff. And I'm like, well, let's pump the brakes for a second. We're 2 films deep into the new Star Wars movies. And yeah, they've got other stuff on the pipeline. They've got Episode 9 coming. They've got the Han Solo movie coming. But before you start getting the outside stuff and the more diverse stories, like what you're getting with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you need to set the stage and get comfortable and get everybody acclimatized to the fact that one of these is going to come out every year. Guardians of the Galaxy was the 10th Marvel movie. People don't realize that. It's the 10th Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, and it was the 4th one after the Avengers broke all the records. The Avengers itself was an experiment. Guardians of the Galaxy certainly was an experiment. So it's okay. Star Wars takes its time, which is exactly what the Extended Universe stuff did back in the 90s with comics and media tie-ins and role-playing games. You know, it stops them from shifting gears mid-stride like DC. And speaking of which, there's a buttload of DC news this week, and it's all off the rails. I mean, you've got stuff like a Joker and Harley Quinn movie that's being worked on. They've got the Crazy Stupid Love directors on that. They're talking about doing another Joker standalone movie, origin story, with Martin Scorsese producing. You've got the Batman, which is the supposedly tied to the DC Cinematic Universe, now not being tied to the DC Cinematic Universe, not having Affleck in. It's going to be standalone. It's not going to have anything to do with the Justice League stories. You've got Patty Jenkins doing Wonder Woman 2, and then another piece of news dropped that apparently Joss Whedon has edited Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor out of the Justice League movie. It is utter chaos in DC, and this is because, as I've been saying for so long, they didn't get their ducks in the row to begin with. They didn't come with a certain approach, or the approach that they had wasn't working, and they had to keep switching gears. Man of Steel as the launching pad was a divisive movie anyways, and then you get the Batman versus Superman, which was divisive, and you got Suicide Squad, which is divisive, and then you have Wonder Woman that's very different from all those three movies that everyone seems to love. Well, now they're sort of trying to backtrack and figure out how to do this and then say, hey, maybe we should have different tones. I mean, I'm all for, I don't think every single movie needs to be continuous, because if you read the comic books, they're not continuous. If you read Batman comics, there's offshoots and stories that they don't reference and things happen, and there's real wonky continuity in the comic books anyways, because especially for something like Batman or Superman, which has so many titles. So I'm okay with them doing that with the movies, but they just seem to be still trying to figure out what they're doing. They're like a drunk man stumbling around. But this is kind of making me nervous, and I'm glad Star Wars is just taking its time. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I'm going to talk about a couple horror movies, because, you know, we're coming up to fall. I built a fire the other day. We have a fire pit in our back patio, and I built a fire, and I mean, it's still August, and yeah, you just got a little more bugs out there. You know, I don't really want to put up a tiki torch, because those have been, you know, stained for the rest of my existence. So I didn't have a citronella candle, so I wasn't able to get rid of the bugs, but it was nice to have a cool night where I could put out a fire, and I'm looking forward to more of those. We got October coming, so that means horror movies. So let's talk about a couple horror movies. First one is Little Evil. It's a Netflix movie. It premieres on September 1st, starring Adam Scott.
My wife and I just recently got married.
She's perfect. She's everything I ever wanted.
And, you know, I'm having a little tiny bit of trouble bonding with my new stepson, Lucas. He never really looks me in the eye. Doesn't talk much, except when he yells at me to get out of his room. Using this weird little goat puppet thing. I get this sense that he's,
That he's evil incarnate.
Yeah.
Honestly, this looks funny. This is horror comedy. I like that. I like Adam Scott. I think he's got, you know, a good sort of tongue-in-cheek approach. I think he's out of the box at times. And Netflix certainly seems to be trying to do a bunch of different things. Netflix is trying to take some chances and take some risks. And yeah, they're building up a huge debt. But it may pay off. Hopefully it will pay off for them in the long run. So that hits Netflix on September 1st. The next one I want to talk about is Jigsaw. The reboot of the Saw franchise opens on October 27.
Any identification on the victim?
Puzzle piece.
But Jigsaw has been dead for 10 years.
It's not him. Can't be.
This was on the body.
The truth will set you free. I'm chasing a dead man.
Just wanting escape.
To the copycat.
Live or die. The choice is yours.
10, 15 years ago, it used to be that every October, every Halloween, you got a new Saw movie. And then it had to go away, and they're trying to resurrect it. So they're bringing back a Jigsaw movie. Is this the real Jigsaw character or not? I liked some of the Saw movies. I thought by the end they got kind of dumb. Part of the reason that I didn't like the later ones is they abandoned the sort of the moral compass of the story. Not to say that these are, you know, fantastic morality plays, but they were in their own twisted way, because the bad people were the ones who got punished. And it was probably about halfway through the series, you know, 4 or 5, that innocent people started getting in these traps and devices. And I'm like, well, the sort of like the guiding principle of the movies, which is kind of what I found appealing about them, was squandered. So hopefully they bring this back. So yeah, Halloween now means we're going to get another Saw movie. And in a way, I'm kind of looking forward to it. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Birth of the Dragon and Leap.
Let the midnight special shine a light on me.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Keikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some movie reviews. Actually, what's interesting about the movies this week is we're in a very typical August. If you've listened to the show long enough, you know that a typical August and a typical September means they don't screen much. And I'm not even in like flyover country. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, which is a pretty big city. And yeah, they screen more stuff in Cleveland and Cincinnati for stupid reasons, but they do tend to screen very little at this time of year. Now, over the last couple years, August hasn't been like that. In particular, last year, you had Suicide Squad on the first weekend of August, and that thing, even though it was an awful movie, it did extremely well, and that kind of carried the box office through the end of the summer. And, you know, a couple years ago, you had Guardians of the Galaxy. I think you had this 1-2 punch of Guardians of the Galaxy and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, so recently, and especially in the last couple of years, there has been an attempt by Hollywood to expand the tentpole releases. And we're seeing that with big movies in March and in February. You know, like Deadpool made tons of money in February, and Beauty and the Beast came out in March and just broke all these records. But you may have heard recently that there was a news story that came out that said movies aren't making as much money right now. And that is because of loss of viewers who end up watching it at home or cable or internet. That does have something to do with it. I think part of it is we're just getting a bit of a regression effect on this one. August usually is a dead time for movies. In fact, there was a time when I started doing movie reviews, I think that no movie had made $100 million at all in August. And we're getting back into that. This is just a normal August where there are smaller movies, even something that's considered a moderate hit like Hitman's Bodyguard, that only made 20-some million last week. So right now, this is very typical of August where there's nothing out there and they're very small movies that nobody really cares about. They're just filling up the release schedule before they start really pounding out the big releases for the holidays. And you start getting award films as well. This is why we have movies like Leap. This one is an animated film, and it tells the story of an orphan who finds her way into an elite Paris dance school and has to face personal challenges.
My name is Felicie Lebrun, and since I can remember, I've wanted to dance. I was there with my mom when I was a baby. Dance school in Paris. Bye-bye, orphanage. We did it!
Paris, city of dreams.
Can you dance?
Yes.
Training starts at 5 a.m.
Reality check, little rat. You can work as hard as you like, but you will always be nothing.
You have something she can only dream of.
This is a smaller animated film. It does not come out from Pixar or Disney or DreamWorks or Illumination or any of those major players. It is a co-production between France and Canada, I believe. And it actually came out in Canada, I believe, last year. And it looks cheap. I mean, just watching the movie, while there's some nicely animated stuff, you can tell it's canned. You can tell it's stuff that wasn't developed in-house, and it wasn't, breaking any boundaries with animation. It seems like there's a lot of pre-made software and pre-designed stuff that you can make into a movie. It just feels like it's a lot of pre-made visuals. And yeah, the story's about this ballerina, but I mean, it's so narrowly focused on the ballet. They maybe needed to put a couple ponies in this movie to sort of fit the little girl's bedroom theme that we have here. It's, I mean, ballet. I mean, my sister, I have a sister 2 years older than me. When we were kids, she took ballet, but a lot of little girls take ballet, but never end up going on with this one. This is about a girl who always wants to dance, but then it has a weird sort of Music Man kind of message that it's like, oh, well, you know, it's not just about training and being involved in ballet for years. You can kind of learn ballet in just a couple months by doing a few exercises and just really, really wanting it. And so the message is a little bit mixed that you could become this massive ballet star just with a couple months of work, even though they're people who train for years at this. And then it has this weird anachronistic humor that seems almost squeezed in there in an American dub. Because in this film, like, there's a scene where a woman, it takes place in 1880 in France. And there's a scene where the bad woman is like sort of like a wicked stepmother in a Disney type of role. And she has a big sledgehammer and she's chasing, I guess she's going to beat her to death, chasing the girl, the lead character with the sledgehammer. And she goes, "It's hammer time." And I groaned. I audibly groaned in the theater when that happened. There's another scene in there where the rival ballerina, they start dancing against each other. And it's like somebody yells, "Oh, it's a dance off." And I'm like, dance off? This is 1880s France. I mean, I understand having a little bit of loosey goosey pop culture references, but come on, this movie's not good. I mean, if you've got a daughter and she's like 10 and she's super into ballet, that's your target market. But anyone else, not at all. So I'm going to have to say Leap sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Birth of the Dragon. Now, this was another one that wasn't screened, but I didn't get a chance to see it. We'll just talk really quickly about it. And, you know, it's going to get a preemptive suck, so no surprise there. This film tells the story of legend Bruce Lee as he battles another kung fu master in the 1960s.
This is kung fu. We're not training for the Olympics. We're training for the street.
Kung fu master Bruce Lee!
Well, I'm Jack Min. He's leaving the Shaolin Temple to check out kung fu in America.
People in Chinatown don't like that I teach whites. He may be the only person in this world who can tear down everything I've been working so hard to build up. Sooner or later, gonna have to fight him.
This one I actually kind of was interested in seeing, and if I had to choose, I would have chosen to see this instead of Leap, but, you know, fate had a different plan for me. This movie looks like it's tailor-made for a very specific audience, just as Leap is tailor-made for this very narrow audience of girls taking ballet. Birth of the Dragon seems to be narrowly focused on people who are like really into martial arts or people who are really into Bruce Lee. And Bruce Lee's story is fascinating, actually, and the fact that he came over in the 50s and 60s and was teaching kung fu to white people, which was a big no-no. Back then, martial arts was very culturally protected. And, you know, kung fu masters did not teach kung fu to anyone who wasn't Chinese or of Chinese descent. And Bruce Lee didn't care. He came to America and started teaching it to people, got him in trouble with some people. So he did break down some barriers. So he was this interesting cultural revolutionary. He was a brilliant martial artist. He became a movie star, burned out very fast because, you know, he died prematurely. He's up there with like James Dean as one of those cultural icons who died before his time. And no one's ever going to match him. You know, even somebody like Jet Li or Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan, who actually trained with Bruce Lee and worked with Bruce Lee. They're not at the cultural level and the iconic level that Bruce Lee was at. I was interested in this one. I think this is going to speak to that audience. But if you're not interested in kung fu and you're not interested in Bruce Lee, you're probably not going to be all that interested in this movie. I'm just being honest here. That's kind of the way this works. But like I said, it's August. This is par for the course. You know, once we start rolling into the fall, they're going to be banging down my door to show me some of these movies for award season. But anyways, right now, I'm just going to have to say Birth of the Dragon gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That is it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about a couple movies I did see, and that is Good Time, 13 Minutes, and Unleashed.
K-9.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
I'm too sexy for my shirt, too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. The first one in this segment, we're actually hit three in this segment because I've got an interview with Kate Micucci. She's in Unleashed, and we'll talk about that later in the segment. But that's coming up in the next segment. Don't miss that. She's great. She's actually a fantastic interview. But the first one I want to talk about is Good Time. Robert Pattinson plays a petty criminal who scrambles to find bail money for his brother after he is beaten up in jail.
Something happened. I don't know exactly what. My brother's been arrested. He's being held at Rikers Island. You could get killed in there.
Sorry, I just have a client that walked in.
We're good?
You get another 10 grand, your brother will get out.
Where are you?
How much money can you get right now?
Come on, bro.
Oh my gosh.
Are you kidding me? What do you think I'm doing this for? I want to get him out tonight.
This is one of those movies that's absolutely resting on a certain actor's shoulders, and that would be Robert Pattinson. Now, Robert Pattinson got a bum rap, and it was a self-inflicted wound when he did the Twilight movies, because there was garbage acting in those movies. Kristen Stewart is a brilliant actor at times, but she slummed it hard in the Twilight movies, and then she got caught up in her own hype. Then she starts banging a director from another movie and kind of ruins his marriage, ruins her relationship. And then she realizes, oh, I kind of have to go back and find myself. So then she starts doing movies like, you know, the Clouds of Sils Maria and get her acting cred back that she had before the Twilight movies. But there was this vacuum gap of her. And Robert Pattinson was very much the same way. His acting was absolute crap in the Twilight movies. Now, he's done other stuff since. Some of them have been garbage movies like Remember Me. Some of them have been kind of interesting, like some of the stuff he did with David Cronenberg, for example. Well, here's him trying to regain a little bit of credibility and dignity in the acting circuit by doing Good Time. And last time I saw him really kind of work into a different character was in the movie The Rover, I think it was. It was sort of this post-apocalyptic kind of film. And it was an interesting movie. I liked that movie, and I liked what he did in that movie. But he went a little bit too far and too redneckish in that movie. This one, he plays, and he's British, but he's playing an American, and I think he wraps himself around it, and he's not sexy, and he's not good-looking, and he's very questionable morally. There's a real energy that this movie has, and a lot of it's the directing, because it's just him trying to find a way to get money and getting more and more desperate to get the money he needs and doing some really bad things in the process. So you really don't like him as a character. The sympathetic character is his brother, who has some mental issues. He's the one who gets caught in this robbery, and he already had been in trouble with the law, and he gets beaten up in jail. And so it's this guy trying to save his brother, really, because he knows that the brother is not going to survive in jail. But the problem is, also, he's the one who kind of put him there because it was his brilliant idea to go rob a bank in the first place. So, you know, it's somebody who makes terrible decisions that cause real big problems and then spends the rest of the movie trying to fix those problems by making even worse decisions and getting in bigger trouble. It's an interesting movie in terms of watching spiraling bad decisions. And we've all known somebody who's like that, who just does a spiral of bad decisions in their life. And I think that worked to a degree. I thought that actually made a compelling movie, and it's directed with energy. It doesn't really bog down. It doesn't get tiring, and it moves. You know, I enjoyed it. Good Time. It was a good time. I'm going to say it kind of rocked.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about 13 Minutes. This German film chronicles the aftermath of the 1939 attempt to assassinate Adolf Hitler. Now, there's no trailer to this because it's in German. this movie's interesting. And now it's also interesting, and I know I talked at length about this last episode, and I'm not going to dive back into this, but this does touch on Nazis. I mean, the Nazis are the bad guy, and it's made by Germans. This is a movie where Germany is trying to reconcile its own soul, even 70 years after World War II. And it's important that this is a German movie because we're so used to seeing movies from an American side about World War II and Nazis. And I talked about them last week, you know, stuff like Indiana Jones. And as entertaining as those movies are, this is told from the German perspective. I mean, and of course, never to imply that just because you're German, you're fans of the Nazis. There are a lot of people in Germany who are natural-born Germans who were victimized by the Nazis and who are not fans of the Nazis. And I think what this shows is it takes it from the perspective of this guy who just kind of made his own attempt to kill Hitler, and he missed him by 13 minutes. It's a famous story. It's a real guy, and it's him getting captured by the SS and then being interrogated. And it flashes back to just his life in this little village where things bigger were happening farther away. At that time, Nazism, the rise of the Nazi Party, was not seen as the massive threat that we can look back at now. It was just another political movement. And it showed the resistance of people to that ideal, what happened to them in this small village outside of Berlin. You know, you can sit there and look at it in the whole theater of World War II developing. But this is all kind of told from this perspective, this tiny little hamlet, really. And it's his perspective and how he came about making the decision to do this and how it came down hard on him and how it was a failure and how it affected a lot of people, not just him, even if these people weren't involved. This is a really intense movie and unique because kind of how last week I was talking about the movie In This Corner of the World, taking it from the Japanese perspective of just living in Japan at the time of World War II. This gives the World War II perspective from the Germans. It's not done by Americans. It's done by Germans. So it gives a really interesting look at what the society where this was taking place, the people are still digesting this and coming to terms with a lot of this. So I'm going to have to say 13 minutes kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Really quickly, let's talk about Unleashed. An app designer in San Francisco discovers her dog and cat have magically turned into humans and are vying for her romantic attention.
I wish there were guys out there like you too.
Be careful what you wish for.
Because astrologically, it's about to get very real for you.
Hey, Carl, have you seen Ajax and Summit?
Oh, crap.
If anything happens to them...
Hey, can I have your coat?
Summit!
Come here, pup!
So what's this?
My name and my phone number.
This is a smaller film. It's an independent movie, and it's a romantic comedy. And what I found interesting, it stars Kate Micucci. Now, most people will recognize her because she's been in a lot of TV shows. She was on Scrubs. She played Ted the lawyer, his girlfriend for a while. She was on Raising Hope. She showed up on The Big Bang Theory. She also is a musician. She has a duo with another woman. They do Garfunkel and Oates. And she play, and a lot of times in her shows, that she shows up, she'll play a ukulele and sing a little song. And she's really adorable. I mean, but she's quirky. She's not your standard, what you would look at as, oh, this is your romantic comedy lead. She's not Sandra Bullock or Reese Witherspoon or Julia Roberts or somebody like that. So she is that sort of independent, quirky actress. And it was an interesting take on this because she is kind of the crazy pet person after she breaks up with her boyfriend in the beginning of the film. But it's her coming to terms with the fact that your pets are going to love you more than a regular human is going to, because the pets literally come to life as human beings and then go. And then some of the jokes get a little heavy handed, and it does at times feel like a bit of a disjointed sketch comedy show, but it's cute, and it's not cute in a saccharine way. It's just kind of cute. She's very adorable in the movie. Sean Astin plays her actual human love interest. He shows up in a lot of independent stuff. He's just, you know, I mean, he's probably still cashing royalty checks from Lord of the Rings. So this is a cute little movie. It's a sweet little rom-com, and it's on demand. It's opening in limited cinemas right now. But if you want to catch it, you can catch it on demand. And it's a nice little, lark of a movie. It's not heavy. It's not dreary. It's not overly oppressive. And there's not a whole lot of rom-coms out there right now that work in that quirky sort of way. So I enjoyed this film. I'm going to have to say that Unleashed kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. When I come back, we're going to be interviewing Kate Micucci from Unleashed, and I'll also talk about the weekly box office and the home cinema roundup.
That weird thing by his side, an infantilized sequoia. The two of them walk by, people say, oh boy. They ask me why I'm bringing a baby into...
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We have done the movie reviews, but now we've got an interview. And that interview is with Kate Micucci. As I told you in the last segment, she was in the movie Unleashed, which opens this week. Let's start off by talking about Unleashed. How did you get involved with the movie? Because I know you did music in there, too. You did some of the songs. Did they go for songs?
I did do some of the music, but I had a call one day, and they said that there's this movie, and they want you to read it, and if you're interested, you can have the part of them. It was just, it's very rare that I get offered it was the first time I was a lead in a movie, so to get offered a lead off the bat like that, I was like, oh, okay, well, let me read it. And I read it, and I fell in love with the script so much, and I was just thrilled that I got to be a part of it. And then the cool thing later, Finn ended up using a bunch of my songs in the soundtrack, and that was really cool too. So it was very serendipitous, I would say.
You said this is the first lead you've had. Did you like being a lead, or was it more work than you wanted to do?
With Garfunkel and Oates, my comedy duo with Ricky Lindholm, we technically, I guess, we were the leads of our TV show that we also produced and created. So I think once you go through a process like that, like just being an actor on a movie was not nearly as difficult, because it's like, you know, I was there to just work on my lines and do a good job. And I wasn't so much worried about the producing side of it for that project. So it was actually very relaxing, I would say. It was great.
You've got a comedy background, and I mean, I'm sure you know plenty of stand-up comedians, and you were in Don't Think Twice last year.
Yeah.
I know my fair share of comedians. They're depressing people. You're not. The stuff that you do tends to be very upbeat and optimistic. Is that just your nature? Was that like a conscious decision? Does it work against you or for you in sort of the comedian climate?
It's interesting. It definitely wasn't a conscious decision. I think it's sort of just my makeup of who I am and maybe where I come from. But yeah, I think my wanting to perform and be a comedian was just really about wanting to, you know, share my stories and my songs with an audience. It didn't really come from a dark place. It never has. I'll knock on wood. But I feel like that's just been me. I don't know. Like there is maybe a bit of a stigma where, you know, and often comedians do go to very dark places, but it's never been my truth. And so I've always just kind of come from a different point of view, I suppose. But my truth is just maybe a little bit on the lighter side, you know, like, you know, I sing about wanting to be a nun or, you know, those types of things.
So, you know, since you brought up nuns, I've got to ask, the last movie I saw you in was The Little Hours.
Yeah.
Which was a comedy, but talk about going into weird places and dark territory.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It really goes off the rails. Do you want to do more than that? Because, I mean, do you feel you're getting kind of sort of typecast as the girl with the ukulele, and do you want to kind of break out on that level?
With The Little Hours, it was definitely a different take. I got to really dive in and sink my teeth into something a little bit crazier and darker, and that is so thrilling and fun, and I definitely want to do more of that. And I've been lucky enough, I feel like, in the past year to do more of that type of thing. So it's nice. I feel like the opportunities have luckily been sort of coming my way in that sense, and I hope to keep going further down more dramatic or darker characters. Or it's fun, you know, it's always fun. And The Little Hours was, even though, you know, it was really, really fun to shoot those kind of crazy, more, I don't want to say sinister, but nutty scenes, I guess.
I got to ask, are you a dog person or a cat person?
It is so funny you just asked me that, because I just looked over and my dog has crept up next to me and I just went to pet her. So that is really funny timing. I'm such a dog person. Yeah, I'm allergic to cats, actually. So I'm not much of a cat person because of that. But I didn't tell the director that because I still wanted to do the part. And it really, you know, I can still, I can handle it enough. It's just that I get a sore throat. but I just adopted a dog about 2 months ago. So, you know, when we were shooting the movie, I really wanted to get a dog. But it's tricky being, doing what I do and traveling so much. It's really hard to have a dog. But now I have this little dog named Claire.
What kind of dog?
A Maltese, but we rescued her. She actually came from South Korea from the meat trade there. Ooh. So she's living a good life here in LA now.
The very typical interview questions. Who are your influences from acting, but also from music?
So acting, I think the big one for me since I was little, I love Lucy. And Lucille Ball has been such an influence on me since I was a kid. And I kind of sometimes think that's the reason I moved to LA. You know, that show really, really made me fall in love with like comedians and comedy. And I guess so that's a big one there. And then music, Billy Joel is like just my favorite. I grew up playing his music. I grew up playing classical piano. Mm-hmm. And then Billy Joel would be like the fun thing I'd get to play after my lesson. So Unleashed, I'm just so excited about it because I feel like it's one of those movies where when people hear the premise, they just automatically are like, oh, I think I need to see this movie, you know? I always just say I'm a girl, I'm lucky in love, and my dog and my cat on a full moon, my dog and my cat turn into men and then fight over me. And once you hear that, you're like, wait, I need to see this movie. So I hope that people really enjoy it as much as we had fun making it.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's take this minute to talk about the box office. I had said last week that The Hitman's Bodyguard was going to win, and I was right. It made over $21 million when people were saying about $15 million. And what's funny is Annabelle Creation was right on that nub as well at $15.5 million. But since The Hitman's Bodyguard overperformed by $6 million, it certainly walked away with the title. Logan Lucky only made $7.6 million. And I find that interesting because I saw somebody complaining about it on film Twitter, and they were saying, oh, what's going on? It's got great reviews. It's got a great cast. It's got a popular director. And I'm like, oh, really? You mean that narrative you've been spinning all summer that we as critics are the ones that are sinking movies or letting them survive? That's not a real narrative? That's just a coincidence for certain movies like Wonder Woman that also audiences like? Or Baywatch that also audiences hate? No, the reality is Logan Lucky was exactly the kind of performance that I expected. It was a lower performance. It was very much a Soderbergh movie, but one of his independent movies. It was not as punchy and cool for the mainstream as Ocean's 11, and putting Daniel Craig in a weird role does not necessarily make the movie a hit. So here's one of those counterexamples that says, hey, great reviews do not necessarily make a movie do well. This week, I think The Hitman's Bodyguard probably is going to win again, probably with about $10 million. Annabelle is going to be second. And a bunch of the newcomers, they're going to be lucky if they hit five. I mean, this is a typical August. Now, last couple of years, we've not had typical Augusts with the original Guardians of the Galaxy and Ninja Turtles and Suicide Squad last year. So this is kind of a normal August that we haven't had for a couple of years. And it's just lame, smaller movies that nobody's watching. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Spotlight this week is on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. In this sequel to the Marvel hit from 2014, we see the ragtag group of space adventurers split up as Star-Lord meets his father.
So we're saving the galaxy again?
Yep.
Awesome! We're really going to be able to jack up our prices for two-time Galaxy Savers.
Yeah! All you do is yell at each other. You are not friends.
No, we're family.
After all these years, I've found you.
And who the hell are you?
I'm your dad, Peter.
This is one of my favorite movies of the summer. I mean, I know Wonder Woman's getting a lot of buzz and attention, and that's great. I mean, and Wonder Woman actually ended up making more money than this. But Bonafide actually made more money because they came out a month apart, so there was no inflation to have to deal with. So this is not to take anything away from Wonder Woman. You can have multiple good movies. Spider-Man was a good movie, too. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was a lot of fun. I rewatched it again, and I know I've heard actually some criticism of it. I've heard somebody complain that they said the music wasn't as good. I'm like, no, they have the music. And in fact, if you go on the Blu-ray, there's a whole section on them putting together the music. Now, they used some songs that were, as they put them, they say it's a little more mature. It's not just as pop as the previous one was, and they have a little more significance to the things that are going on screen. But I still thought the soundtrack was fantastic. I thought the soundtrack had some obscure stuff, but also had some great, well-known songs. I heard somebody complain that it was kind of just a rehash of the first movie, and I was like, no, not at all. It kind of does the Empire Strikes Back thing. It splits everybody up, which is kind of what you need to do, because we got them working together as a family. This movie was about them learning to exist and coexist as a family and continue. And of course, Baby Groot's adorable. The opening sequence, I'm talking about the whole thing where Baby Groot is dancing around listening to music as they're fighting this giant space slug in the background. And I love the visuals of it. I love the fact that to talk about coming from the same owner, you know, Disney owns Marvel and Star Wars. It looks wholly different from a Star Wars movie. It still has that excitement and the action, but it has the colors and the sort of that pop culture coolness without being dirty and grungy. And I like the vibrant look of Guardians of the Galaxy. So this one's a lot of fun, almost as good as the first one. And the DVD and Blu-ray has some great stuff. It has a director's commentary. It has about 40 minutes of special features. One of the best things about it, though, is there is a music video that's sort of made like a music video from 1980 with David Hasselhoff singing. You heard the song in the bumper of this segment. I could not take my eyes off of this. It is so bizarre to watch. That's a must watch on the Blu-ray. So, ultimately, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That is it. I need to go for the week. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about A Boy Called Poe, Jackals, and Menasha. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.